Enter, if you dare.
Once again to Dark Discussions, your place for the discussion of horror, film, fiction, and all that's fantastic. I am one of your co-hosts, Philip, from the state of New Hampshire in the U.S. of A., and with me in the state of Michigan.
This is Eric.
Hey, Eric, how's it going?
I am well.
Excellent. And in the state of New York?
Hi, this is Mike.
Mike, how's it going, man?
I'm fine, Phil. How are you?
I'm doing all right. And in the Commonwealth of Virginia?
Hey, this is Barrett.
Barrett, how's it going, sir?
Doing well.
Excellent. And speaking of the Commonwealth of Virginia, me and Mike will be in another Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, October 8th. Well, actually, October 9th, right, Mike?
Yes.
Yeah. So it's the Creature Feature Drive-In.
Double feature.
Yeah. So it starts at noon and they have vendors there and people can trick-or-treat out of everybody's car. And whatnot, and then they're doing a double feature of Grindhouse Midnight Movies or something. So it should be a good time. I'll be heading down on Friday, probably hike a mountain either Friday night or Saturday morning, part of the Appalachian Trail over there. It's a short one, a small one, like only 900 feet. And then what else?
900 feet is a lot when it's up.
Yeah,
that's true.
Yes, it is. Yeah, and that will be outside of Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, so outside the capital. So it should be a good time, but we'll give our thoughts in a couple of weeks. What else we got here? Who we are, for folks who've just stumbled upon us. We are Dark Discussions News Network, which is www.darkdiscussions.com. It's a website that has all sorts of things about movies and pop culture, so we discuss sci-fi, fantasy, thrillers, techno thrillers, mystery, grindhouse, art house, midnight movies, cult films, horror films, and whatnot. The website has articles, reviews, release notices, podcasts, a good 15 to 20 podcasts, and even Eric's video reviews are posted up there, the ones that he does on YouTube. We have specific links to those right there on the website, and it's a place you can also email us at darkdiscussions@aol.com, or just press the contact us link on the menu on the website, and we will read your emails on the podcasts. Also, Eric, what else can they find on that website?
They can find links to our Patreon page. Patreon is a service that allows you to contribute financially to your online artists like us. Producing this show is not free. We have to pay for stuff like computer equipment and web servers and hosting and websites and rentals and all sorts of stuff. So if you would like to help us off – man, I cannot talk tonight. If you would like to help us offset the cost of producing this show – that's how you can do it. You can go to patreon.com/darkdiscussions. And for every $5 a month that you care to contribute, you'll have the opportunity to submit a topic for us to possibly do a show on. We take all the submissions from our patrons and we draw one at random on a quarterly basis. So if that's something you'd be interested in, you can go to patreon.com/darkdiscussions or follow the Patreon badge on any page of darkdiscussions.com.
That's right. And we do have a Facebook group called Dark Discussions Podcast Facebook Group. And I think maybe, Eric, you were confusing your words because maybe someone else is in your brain with you.
Maybe.
Indeed. All right. So if anybody wants to get a hold of us, once again, just email us. Again, we will read your emails on the podcast. Also, if we have time at the end, we'll give our things that we've been watching or any news that we wanted to bring up. But that's only if we have time. But until then, we can probably get into our topic tonight. But before we do, one last thing, which is today, September 23rd, 2021. We don't necessarily release episodes the very next week, though this one will probably release pretty quickly because of the October 8th thing, I mean 9th thing that me and Mike are doing. But some folks are curious when we do record, because sometimes we don't release an episode until maybe a month or two later. So I guess with all that stated, Eric, why don't you let everybody know what we're going to discuss tonight?
All right. Tonight we're going to be talking about the latest movie from director James Wan, currently in theaters and on HBO Max, Malignant.
I'm having visions.
The body of Dr. Florence Weaver was found brutally murdered in her home this morning.
Did you know her?
No, but I saw her die.
I'm seeing things. I'm seeing murders. As they're happening.
Hello?
He says his name is Gabriel. I think he's someone from my past.
Happy birthday.
Whatever happened to you before you joined our family hurt you in a way that I can't even imagine.
Stop saying that.
Maddie, who are you talking to?
Gabriel.
Is he your imaginary friend? Imaginary friend?
He's the devil. Killed again. He's getting closer. He wants to talk to you. Mom, what do you know? He's coming for me.
Right, this is James Wan's new film. He actually had another film that came out on HBO Max as well earlier, Conjuring 3, where he produced that one. This one here he directs, and it's written by Akila Cooper as the screenwriter, based off of a story that Cooper co-wrote with James Wan and his wife Ingrid Bisou, the Romanian actress. The film stars Annabelle Wallace and Maddie Hassan, among other folk. Maddie Hassan is probably the person I knew mostly because she played the blonde girl in We Summon the Darkness, the Taylor Swift produced film. So, yes, completely different role here. She looked completely different.
Yeah. I didn't even recognize her.
Yeah. I looked her up after, and I was like, oh, that's the same girl. I would have never known. The film is getting decent reviews, about 76% out of 127 on Rotten Tomatoes, if people actually care about that. But that generally means that good things, because a lot of people do that. Critics have been more – I mean, our audiences have been more mixed – all the way from A plus to F, depending on their tastes. The film is being pushed hard on HBO Max, so a lot of folks who may not be horror fans or thriller fans may be watching it unaware of what they're getting into. So that's pretty much all I got here about the film. So I guess we can get into our thoughts and how we heard about this film, and I guess I'll start. How I heard about this film was it just appeared on HBO Max. I didn't even know it was there because I've been watching much TV. And then I saw people posting on Facebook about it. That's James Wan's new film. And I said, oh, okay, that's interesting. So that's how I heard about it. And my thoughts on the film is WTF. This is a strange, strange film. Though it does fit into the Midnight Movie Grindhouse films, so I guess it's normal. But it doesn't. It's weird for this day and age because this film feels like it, or at least the second half feels like it would have fit nicely back in the 80s or something. The first half was kind of really just a ripoff of Insidious, and it really didn't do anything for me. But the second half, oddly, was the part I enjoyed more, even though it was strange. Though the last 5 minutes of the film I felt was a bad ending. But generally, I thought it was a pretty solid film. Definitely not something I was expecting, and I have no idea where I would put this against other films I've seen this year. But it definitely isn't in the top. It's could be in the top. I mean, the bottom 20 or so, or bottom 10 of the top 20. But I'm not even sure about that yet. I'll have to think it over. That's my thoughts. Let's go with you, Eric.
I don't remember how I heard about this movie, but I heard about it like the week before it was coming out. So I was planning to go see it. I actually went to see it in the theater. And this movie is divisive, including I'm divided about it against myself.
Sounds like me.
This sounds like we had similar thoughts. There are parts of this movie that I didn't care for. There's some, in my opinion, less than stellar acting. There's some serious story issues. However, there's also a great score, some great moments, some great one-liners. And in the third act, things turn on a dime and go bananas. And when that happened, I was just like, I am in. So it sounds like Phil and I have similar thoughts in that regard, in that the first two-thirds of the movie were like, whatever. And the last act came, we were like, okay, now I'm paying attention. I like this movie, even though I logically understand that it makes no sense. So I would hesitate to recommend it to anybody, though, because I think it's really going to depend person to person whether they have the capacity to enjoy this movie or not. So I'm coming up with a big wishy-washy maybe, but I personally enjoyed it. So. Those are my thoughts.
All right, sounds good. Let's go with you, Mike.
Yeah, someone pointed out that this film has bad acting and bad writing and a weirdly derivative premise. And some cheap jump scares. Yeah, I really couldn't argue about any of that. If one argued, though, that the movie has some really cool stuff you might not have ever seen before, and some good kills, and is just kind of nutsy fun, yeah, also true. I said this when I walked out of theater, which is, I didn't know anything about it going in. All I know is I saw a review by Rath James White, the author who did Come Back to Me, I think. And he had said that the movie is ridiculous. And I kind of tongue-in-cheek replied, we should make it sound like that's a bad thing. He very much was definitely against the film. But he's absolutely right. It is a ridiculous movie. Top to bottom, ridiculous. But I'm also right in that it's not necessarily a bad thing. If someone says that this is their best film of the year or this is their worst film of the year, I'll just go, yep, I totally understand that. And I understand people being a little confused also because of that. I believe that movies are kind of an alchemy as opposed to math. And even you're not adding the parts together and you're adding a bunch of bad stuff and somehow you're getting something fun and kind of interesting out of it. Yeah, why not? I definitely give this a recommend for people that are willing to give it a shot. But yeah, Phil, you're absolutely right. This definitely has an 80s feel to it. Something like you would caught on Cinemax late at night.
Indeed. All right, sounds good. And let's go with you, Barrett.
I had been seeing advertisements for this on HBO Max for a while, and I was going to see it regardless because it's a horror movie, and I like to watch as much horror as I can. And I loved this movie. It is definitely not for everyone. I liked the buildup. I liked how bonkers it got at the end. It worked for me. It may not work for everybody, but I give it a recommend. It was fun. There are some great kills. I think you have to go into it with a certain mindset. You can't necessarily expect it to work for everyone. That's for sure.
All right. Sounds good. I think we have a wiki arc.
Wiki.
Madison is paralyzed by shocking visions of grisly murders, and her torment worsens as she discovers that these waking dreams are, in fact, terrifying realities.
All right. That blurb is kind of misleading and kind of not misleading. It makes it sound like it's going to be someone that has visions or has...
Well, she does.
Yeah, but I mean, like dream visions, like visions where you're.
Well, she kind of does.
She does.
But I mean, like telekinesis or ESP or one of those.
Telekinesis has nothing to do with dreaming, Phil.
Well, ESP is crying.
Telepathy, you mean?
It kind of does. Kind of.
It kind of does.
Yeah. All right.
This movie's going to be so hard to talk about pre-spoiler. Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. I have done very little homework on this film. I knew very little about it, as I said, going into it. And I mostly just happened to be near the theater at 7 o'clock when it was showing. And thankfully, it was at AMC. So even though it was 5 minutes away from the theater at 7 when the movie started, I was still able to get my ticket, get my popcorn, and get my seat before the film actually started. Because of all the commercials in front of it. So I don't know if I otherwise would have seen it. But, my understanding is this is inspired by giallos, which is a subgenre I really am not well informed about, besides the fact that they're Italian and they tend to feature people with black gloves. And like Lovecraftian films with tentacles, this is a thing that does have black gloves, so I guess that might make it a giallo homage, but I don't know much else about that.
Giallos are like serial killer films before Halloween. So basically, everybody says Halloween's the first, slasher film, but giallos were there before them, as was Psycho.
Well,
so,
and it's like that. I might be even less informed than Mike about giallos, but my understanding is that most of the time there's a detective involved.
True. There's a detective in this movie.
Mm-hmm. True. There's always a detective. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. So it's almost like it's weird. They're slasher films with a police procedural going on at the same time.
Right.
So anyway, Mike, you were saying before I interrupted you to
explain that's,
what a giallo was.
Yeah. So I would say, so that's basically the framing of it. There is something supernatural in this film, and that's not spoiling anything because you find that out in the first scene of the movie. That there's something supernatural going
on. Makes no sense and is never explained, and I'm completely confused why they even had that.
Phil is correct. We'll talk about it post spoiler.
Yes. I'm not arguing that it does or doesn't make any sense. I'm just I've seen it.
Which part doesn't it?
The supernatural aspect, but it is a horror
movie.
It might
not be supernatural. It might not be.
Wait, let's wait.
No. You don't know what we're talking about.
Yeah. No, I'm talking. There's there's a thing about controlling electricity, which you find out like in the first scene of the film.
Yeah, we'll talk about it post spoilers.
Supernatural.
We'll talk about it post spoilers.
Yeah, we'll discuss after. So continue, Mike. Continue.
But anyway, I don't know if that giallos normally did a supernatural thing. But like in the 80s, a lot of films, those the B films, there would be some supernatural angle or twist to stuff. And that's why this really kind of felt in a way like a lot of 80s films to me, along with the, I mean, it's got good production values, but you wouldn't necessarily know it. it's just a weird thing. And it does have that feel to me. It does feel like something out of the VHS era. In fact, the film starts, if I can spoil this, with the Warner Brothers logo looking like it's on a well-worn VHS tape.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this is a very deliberate callback. And again, I've seen people saying that the silliness, the bad writing and bad acting were deliberate.
Possibly. I would need to have that proved to me.
Yeah, I'm not sure of that, but it worked.
But at the same time,
like
if someone
this said, is like a super high budget B movie.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I mean, like if somebody had said, you know, if you go to a Thanksgiving meal and someone said, no, they wanted the turkey to be very dry. well, congratulations, it you did it, but that doesn't mean that the people are eating it are going to like it. So again, you get back to the divisive thing, and is that a thing that's going to work for everybody? And it clearly is not a thing that's going to work for everybody, and there's nothing wrong with that. But this is more of this: either you get past the fact that the nuts and bolts of this are really kind of not great,
I mean,
or you don't, and I don't blame anybody for not.
Right, and it's so funny because like people that I know, people that like on the pages on Facebook that I frequent, right, on other podcasts and everything, like they're all over the place on what they're saying about this movie. It's really kind of hilarious. Like I've gotten everything from this is the best movie of the year to this thing is a piece of trash. There is no consensus on this movie, and I find it hilarious.
It's funny because while I was watching it, I was like, I'm not sure if I like this or not. I'm not sure if I like this or not. And then I got to the end and I was like, I love this movie. So it's strange.
I think it all comes down to the final reveal and if you're on board or not. And if you're not on board, you're going to feel like you wasted your time. And if you're on board, then you're going to love it.
And I will say, I could compare this to one very particular 80s film that if I said the name would spoil it.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. You know, but maybe something earlier from the 70s was, or maybe 1980 was It's Alive.
Is
one that maybe makes, that doesn't
that
exactly
movie.
Spoil it. I'm not saying
Back
that.
Back in Case though was awesome. That movie was the best.
Yeah,
but, yeah. Gets Alive was yeah, yeah.
Anyway, so it's not a thing that is entirely unprecedented. Let me just say that. This is a film with precedent.
Yeah. There's nothing original. Well, there is things original, but there isn't. It's like what Dan O'Bannon said in his screenwriter's commentary for Alien, where he said, there's nothing original out there. What you got to do is take these ideas that you know or have seen and make them your own. And I think James Wan kind of
just... I agree.
Yeah, you got to have your own voice, and that voice has to spark emotion in the people that are watching or listening or, you know, gazing at your work of art.
Indeed. I don't know if people would call this a work of art, but
I think it's a work of art.
Yeah, it is. But it's definitely a nothing that we have not seen before. From the first act, like I said, is basically typical James Wan films, you know, Conjuring, Insidious stuff. And then the last half is I actually even said to, I think you, Barrett, that it felt like Upgrade or someone. It was with you where the ending was a ripoff of even Upgrade action from 1L or even and I didn't mention this, but what Quentin Tarantino's Kill Bill. And then of course, as Mike mentioned, Basket Case and Alive. And then, of course,
even Terminator a little bit.
Yeah, Terminator. And then what Juan even said himself, which is the Giallo films of the 60s and 70s and 80s. It has a lot of pieces and makes it very
pieces parts.
Sadly, I think it's one of his best films.
Yeah.
I just think it's awesome.
It's all right. I mean, it's interesting. I think this may be his first horror film where he doesn't have Juan L. as a writer, which is interesting. But again, Juan L., as we know, is often in making top quality films now. So he obviously probably didn't have time to write this film, and he's writing his own scripts for his own films now. This one is could be correct what Barrett said, and Mike seems to agree, which is it may be his Juan's best film, but I don't know.
It's hard. I mean, I know he's got films like the Saw films, and was it just the first Saw film that he did, or how many did he do?
He originated it. I don't know.
Yeah, he definitely originated it.
He and Juan L. originated it.
That is true. Yep.
Right, Juan L., but he still
for that film.
So
he did Saw. He did Saw, Dead Silence, Death Sentence,
Insidious,
Doggy Heaven, Insidious. Juan L. wrote Insidious though. The Conjuring, which I think Juan L. wrote, but actually I'm not sure. Now I'm confused. Insidious.
Well, we're more looking at what did he direct though? Is at least what I'm looking at.
Yeah, Furious 7, Conjuring 2, Malignant, and then he has the Aquaman film that he did, and then the new one that's coming out next year.
Right. So, and by the way, credit to him for doing a movie like this when he's done Fast 7 and Aquaman, made $1 billion. Not a lot of people take that step backwards. Sam Raimi certainly did when he did Drag Me to Hell right after doing the Spider-Man films.
I take offense at that, Mike. You don't step backwards when you do grindhouse genre horror.
That's not how Hollywood looks at it.
I disagree with you, Phil.
Fist pump on the other side. But I know what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, the best way I was able to describe the tone of the film to my wife, in some parts, when we talk about it being bad, do you know how, they sometimes have a movie within a movie?
Mm-hmm.
And to make it clear to the audience that you're watching a movie, that the characters in the movie are watching, that it's not a real thing in the movie itself,
the
writing is very over the top, and the dialogue is over the top, and the acting is so bad that you have obviously know that it's not real. And or like commercial where like that spoofs horror films and like, you know, they're trying to run away from the bad guy, they're from the villain.
Let's run into the barn where all the tools are. Yeah,
right, and it's so clearly parody the way it's written. There are scenes like that in this film, except it is actually the film. It's not. It's part of the film. It is the film itself is written at that level and performed at that level, and it just is like so bizarrely bad, and so cliched, and it leans into it. I think I just jotted down one like at the opening scene in the hospital, and like the one woman yells, "Don't go in there! It's going to kill you!" And it's just like so, like was that placeholder dialogue that they never got around to to making better?
Well, I think we should get into spoilers, but before we do, I just want to say that one of the actors that Phil didn't mention at the beginning was Nicole Brianna White, who played the lead detective's partner and provided a lot of the comic relief for the movie, and had a brilliant one-liner she delivered that literally made me laugh out loud in the middle of the movie theater, which is that she looked at a composite drawing of someone and said, "What, I'm going to put out a bolo on Sloth from Goonies?"
That was the greatest line of the movie.
Such a bizarre reference, because who the hell is going to get that besides people like us, right?
Well, a lot of people, apparently, because I saw that a number of people post on Facebook just that one line. And yeah, but,
the only people who are going to get the Goonies reference are like, who has seen Goonies since it was in the theater? I mean, like, people
a lot of people
age are the only ones that are going to get that, because I don't think like your teenagers these days are watching Goonies on video, are they?
It's got a following. I do know that.
It?
I don't.
Okay. I bought it, and I let my kids see it, and they'll probably see it this October too.
But yeah. Man, did that make me laugh out loud! I thought that was fantastic.
It was awesome.
Yeah. I mean, that's what filmmakers do. That's a J.J. Abrams type of thing, or the guy that did Smith Get Out. What's the guy?
Kevin Williamson, right? Was the from Scream?
Scream guy, yeah.
Yeah, that guy. Who's the guy that did Get Out? What's his name? Peele. Him. Quentin Tarantino. They all do stuff like that where they give winks to the stuff they loved as a kid, and the people who will get it are the people that grew up and are the same age as they are, and that's why we all got it. So. It was awesome. Now, let's see. Anything else we wanted to bring up before we get into spoilers? But before we do that, for folks who are new to the podcast, we don't just review films. We also critique and dissect the film. So we go into specifics, plot spoilers, specific scenes that we want to talk about and make commentary on and whatnot. And so we will throw up the spoiler alert very shortly. But before we do, is there anything else that anybody wanted to bring up in general about the film and James Wan or anything else?
I was just going to say the effects and the action were all fantastic.
Yeah. I've actually got the – because I've tried watching it earlier, rewatching it. I only made it halfway through, so I've had it playing on muted in the background, and I'm on the jail scene, and it's like the weirdest music video ever. It's just.
Did you notice that one of those people was Zoe Bell?
Oh, I thought one of them looked familiar. Yeah. Okay.
That's too funny.
Yeah.
I bet that was intentional too.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Now you were going to say something, Barrett, or was someone else was going to say something too? Mm-hmm. Was that it?
Nothing. All right.
I guess we can throw out the spoiler alert. So at this point, we're going to talk about everything and anything. So we will spoil the big reveal and all that other stuff. Because again, as Eric said, it's kind of hard to talk about this film without actually talking about some of the crazy stuff, including the supernatural aspect that Mike was mentioning, obviously the big twist, and various other things in the film. So we have thrown up the spoiler, and we will begin. So, all right, what do we want to talk about?
The supernatural aspect of this movie is bizarre and makes no sense. I don't understand how.
Well, none of it really makes any sense.
Well, and secondly, it doesn't have to be supernatural. Mind powers don't necessarily have to be supernatural.
That's kind of supernatural.
Whatever.
No, I mean, there's ESP isn't necessarily considered supernatural.
This is kind of it is.
That's kind of supernatural.
No.
I think you're outvoted here.
It's not natural. It's not a thing.
I can think of a science fiction series of books where all of the mind powers are considered science fiction, not supernatural.
Yeah, but it's not a natural thing, and so it's kind of a hand wavy science fiction, not a Jules Verne hard science fiction thing.
It's a pretty hard sci-fi series.
I totally disagree with you.
It's a fantasy element introduced to it.
Yeah,
I don't agree with you.
Well, the definition of supernatural is sometimes misused, where people just think that means ghosts and all this other stuff. But supernatural means anything that isn't part of the natural existence or world. So if you wanted to throw in weird –
that could be science fiction too, though. We don't know that. Science fiction isn't necessarily something we can comprehend, but it does exist.
All right. Well, we're just arguing semantics here. Either way, okay, as I said, it's semantics. The point is there's mind powers that occur that don't have anything to do with the film, except it's in the film. It's kind of weird. The
entire film.
Yeah.
It's the power he has. Why does that have nothing to do with the film? It's a power that he has.
Here's my issue with the powers, okay, is because, well, I don't even know how to approach this because you kind of got to get to the end so you can talk about the beginning. So ultimately it is revealed, and we put the spoiler flag up. So if you haven't seen this movie and have any interest in seeing this movie, just bail.
Don't listen.
Because I'm about to ruin it for you if you haven't seen it. So it is ultimately revealed that what's going – no, I can't. It's too early. I can't even get there yet. But you can't – my problem with the supernatural powers is that – or whatever the fuck you want to call it is that they also try and give you a medical explanation of what's going on. And to me, it seems like they're trying to explain the powers with the medical explanation, and that makes no damn sense to me in any way, shape, or form.
Well, I mean, it's clear, I think, in the beginning, seems to me, because we actually do see in the opening scene, we see Gabriel. We just see Gabriel through a plastic sheet, but
I saw something. I had no idea what the hell I was looking at.
You were just missing some context, but you pretty much do see see Gabriel there. It's just kind of hazy.
Yeah, you just don't know it's Gabriel yet.
But you get an idea, and they tell you right away that the thing is absorbing the electricity they tried to use for electroshock therapy or whatever they were doing. And it's clearly manipulating. It's talking through the radio, so it clearly has these electricity powers. It's a mutant creature. There is nothing that makes any sense biologically in this. It's sort of like the character in Friday the 13th Part 7, who for just some random reason has psychic powers. It's just a thing that – it's just a mutant creature. It's a mutant person, and part of being a mutant is that it's got this weird electrical ability. And that's like that's it. That's going along with it. They don't make any attempt to reference it any other way. It just has these powers. I don't think that it's essential in the film, save to allow them to do a few weird or spooky things and have it speak to people.
Well,
I think is important, though, that it speak to them. Sorry.
Well, go ahead. He could speak.
There's also an inconsistency on how it's implemented. I can give you an example. One example is that on one of the videotapes they find from her childhood, they show on a videotape a toy phone ringing and her answering it, talking to somebody.
I can explain that because she's I can't explain it without ruining the end.
Well, spoiler territory. It's spoiler. So no. Does it matter?
Let's just say it this way.
Here's the counterpoint to that. What I'm trying to explain here is that there's that where there's an actual physical manifestation, and then there's also the fact that this thing is playing mind tricks on the main character.
I was going to say, it might not be actual in reality that thing's ringing. She just hears it ringing.
But they show it on a videotape. It was captured on a videotape. Yes.
Exactly.
So it physically happened. And that's what I'm talking about, is the dichotomy between – clearly there's evidence that that happened, and then there's these other things where it's just messing with her head. And I think that's – well – at the very least, lazy. At the very worst, just tricking your audience with stuff.
I hadn't thought about that scene, but how did he even get on videotape? Because she had been sent to her room and she was alone. Why is the video camera in there at all?
No, but
Dad has a fetish.
Well,
go ahead, Phil. What are you going to say?
Again, there may be. Well, I don't know. I mean, a couple of things is that obviously the film has a lot of unanswered questions and flaws in the script, which which is okay because it is a grindhouse film. And if this was a film from 1983, everybody that hates it now would be saying, this is the greatest film ever. But since it's brand new, people are poo-pooing it.
But do you understand why it's bothering me?
No.
Yeah, it's bothering me now because I don't know why the video camera was in there recording her at that point. Because in my mind, I was thinking that the phone was ringing, but it, you know, and when I got through with the film, I thought that, you know, he was just controlling her. But now that you're saying that, I don't know how it got recorded, and that makes no
right.
sense.
The whole thing's weird. So anyway. I just had this issue. I thought the electricity powers were over the top and not explained well. And it sounds like Mike doesn't care, but I do.
Well, I'll say this: the in theory don't even need to be part of the film, but I see why he put it in because it's a kind of a cool thing to have the creature be able to use. You know, the radio or
cell
speaker
phones.
Systems, yeah, cell phones to communicate mm-hmm. because it's kind of scary and creepy. And so that's why he did it. But it doesn't make any sense at all, except for what Mike says, which is the only explanation is it's a mutant, like mm-hmm. in a superhero story rather than a horror film. So
but then let me ask you this. If they're connected by the brain, how come she doesn't have the powers too?
She does at the end.
Well, how come she doesn't?
She might not have electrical, but
I mean, how come this thing, this parasite that has been feeding off her body, and they make a reference to that, when it controls her, is super fast, super strong, super agile?
Well, that's another thing that's
right.
not explained. Yeah.
And that's why
a superhero.
Yeah, it just yeah, right. just
could be
roll with it. That's it.
All you have to do is put one. I don't. If they had SWAT machine guns in the police station, she's dead and the movie's over because she's just a person. Well, even when she's taken over, she's still a person. So one bullet in the head, she's dead.
You don't know all the powers she has.
They could be sharing the brain, but it hit. He could have more powers from the brain than her. Like, he's accessing different parts of it. So he's able to use adrenaline maybe to beef up his speed and strength and everything. I mean, I'm just throwing things out at the wall. But
and the number one thing. Okay, I'm sorry. I just got to get it out of my system.
Fair.
The number it's one fair. Thing in this movie that does not make any goddamn sense in any way, shape, or form is the fact that when they found out that they had to get rid of Gabriel – they like detached the parts that were sticking out and just like took his face and shoved it into her skull.
And yeah, because somehow, they said
I haven't gotten to the part that makes no sense. The part that makes no sense is that Gabriel somehow controls a little peekaboo door in the back of her fucking head to stick his face out.
Right.
But I liked
because,
it.
Bleeding and how does it seal itself up and all that? Yeah, that's
right.
True.
Yeah.
Also, another thing too that bothered me about the film was if there's a mutant that has these powers, whatever we want to call them, and is in your command,
you can call them supernatural. I'll agree with you guys. It's supernatural. Just say supernatural.
All right, so if we have this mutant, you would think. The scientists would have brought this to the public and say, look what we have here. I mean, documented and all that other stuff. And then it's like, this is huge. This, oh my God, this proves that there's superpowers or supernatural or science, whatever you want to call it. It's proof. And they don't try to prove it.
But I could see if it was the government hiding, they would have hidden it, right? Mm-hmm. But not these general scientists that are just working on it and trying to help her out. Yeah. They bury it all.
Right. That's a Nobel Prize right there.
And that's kind of where I was going from the science fiction side of it is thinking that they're thinking genetics are causing all these different things. You know, somehow he's got some mutant powers. Mm-hmm. And that was the only point I was trying to make.
Yeah, okay. See, to me, it's that, look, the movie is there. And, you know, you just, I don't think just, I just ruled with it, you know. It doesn't make any sense. The fact that you start with a conjoined male-female twins, which is not going to happen. So it tells me that, okay, all science has been flushed down the toilet. And
true,
we're just going to have some fun with it. And, you know, I was speaking with someone recently, and he had said he had stopped watching The Walking Dead several years ago when he realized they were never going to tell us how the zombies happened.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well,
does it matter?
Does it matter? Well, I needed to know. Okay, if you're a person who needs to know,
make it up.
To enjoy it, then no, you're not going to be able to enjoy this film.
But I did.
Oh no, I know that. I'm just saying. But some people have that need, and yeah, and this is a thing where I'm perfectly happy just to not even try, because I'm sorry, they're not going to come up with an explanation that is in any way anything other than absolute and total bullcrap.
Right.
Any more than Superman having powers because the sun is yellow. It's just like, huh? Oh, okay.
It's like adding mindless action to a horror film.
Well, and that's exactly what it is.
And it was great. That's why I loved it.
And it's not just a horror film. It's a grindhouse film. This is true 42nd Street shit from 1979 to 1987, you know, where you would go in and just watch these B movies that were like insane. And, you know, the only thing it didn't have was boobs. But it has everything else that is from that era.
That jailhouse scene especially.
Yeah, exactly. And then when she rips her back of her head open, it's like, what the, that's what I went, what the fuck?
That's what I actually started enjoying the movie, because the first two-thirds of the movie, I was just going, oh, man, this is dumb. Oh,
did
man.
Did it start for you when the woman fell through the roof in front of the cops? That's kind of when it started for me. I was like, oh, okay, that's good. Because I had
that's not much before.
But when shit started going bananas at the jail, I was just like, oh my God, what's going on? I love it.
Well, I got to be honest. I mean, I might have started leaning into this with the Goonies line.
Uh-huh.
I might have started leaning into it with the psychic cops thing.
Yeah.
And speaking with the sister, I actually might have been leaning into it when she comes in with the princess dress on.
I really liked their relationship in this movie. I thought that was one of the strongest parts of the movie, was they had such a close relationship.
Oh God. And am I forgetting? There was a character in this film. Was she just like Detective Red Herring, the Miss Lonely Hearts?
The CSI with the glasses. Yeah. Yeah.
By the way, that's James Wan's wife. That's Ingrid Bisou.
Is that the only reason she had a speaking role? Because she like literally contributed nothing to the film other than her presence.
The script.
They said she has a crush on the detective.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, we knew that.
And it goes nowhere. It literally goes nowhere. And it's so. It was just to give his wife a speaking gig,
I guess.
Right. Well. The detective had.
It's good to be the king.
There was a crush with the
sister. Hey, go talk to Rob Zombie.
There was the crush with the sister, and the cop too, and that never went anywhere either. Mm-hmm. So it's like this guy's just like a babe magnet or something, but he's clueless or something. I don't know what's going on.
Oh, God.
The guy at the beginning who was playing Madison's husband.
That is one of the most pure, scummy husband moments. Like, can you distill a total dipshit in like less than five minutes?
Yeah.
And that's it. Okay. You know, it's. I'm sorry for your miscarriages, but it hurts me too.
That was some of the over-the-top writing, is because the line he delivered is, "I'm tired of watching my children die inside of you."
Yes.
Like, dude, what the fuck?
Yeah, I was like, man, he needs to die soon.
No, but the thing is people don't talk that way. Even evil people don't talk that way. It's like James Bond, villainy, ridiculous.
But the world would be so much better if they did.
Yes, because we would be able to detect them much easier.
We could detect the psychos.
Yes, yes, dude. I meet them every friggin' day of my life, and you'd only find out 4 weeks later after they've burned you.
Fuck yeah, that's those Taylor Swift fan clubs.
I did enjoy the detail that the way that Gabriel was, activated, for lack of a better term, was when he slammed her head against the wall.
That was neat.
Yeah.
Makes a little bit of sense in conjunction with everything else.
That was rough to watch, to be honest with you.
Yeah,
that was really, really good, though, because it makes one reason that the film has a little sense. And also, I was wondering when she went to bed if there was going to be a blood pile or blood stain, I should say, on her pillow.
And there was.
And it was. I was like, this is good writing. So I thought this movie was going in the right direction, even after that bad acting or bad lines, you know. And then, of course, it went into the insidious moments. And I was like, oh, this is not scary at all. I've seen this hundreds of times, the stingers and all that other stuff. It's not working.
It's funny because you think that she's seeing something that's happening somewhere else. But in reality, she's locked in her head. So she's actually seeing what's happening, which I thought – I mean, it's not as cool while you're seeing it, but once you know that it is what's happening, it's awesome.
Yeah. I want to watch this movie again so I can appreciate some of those moments a little more.
There was a couple of tricks, though, that they did, too, where...
Oh, there were a bunch of lousy tricks.
No, but like, when she's holding the door to make sure the monster doesn't get in, and then it bangs on the door, and then it knocks the door over, and she gets crushed by the door, and it's like... Those were tricks to make us think something else.
We're supposed to believe at that moment that there's some supernatural presence that just took out her husband and is after her now.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
It's a red herring.
Yeah, and I think that was a little cheat. That was
I agree. That was a cheat.
Yeah, there's a scene later
about, ooh, Gabriel can make your seat whatever. But I didn't appreciate it.
I think it's the second scene or third scene, I guess, with not counting the opening of Gabriel, where she's like seeing the sort of shadowy figure. And, you know, so that's to kind of give us the impression that, again, like Phil said, it's trying to convince us that Gabriel is a separate entity. And I was expecting. Right. I mean, I was on board. I pretty much expected this to be – I'm watching this going, this is Basket Case. This is the conjoined twin in the beginning of the film. Got cut away from her. It didn't die. It was living in the lab for the last 20 years and has somehow managed to make its way back to her. That's what the story is going to be. The idea that it was still there didn't pop up into my head because, you know, she had been pregnant. I imagine the husband, as much of a dipshit as he was, might have noticed another human being hanging off of her. I never thought of the drive-thru window. So I do think it was a cheap mislead. It wasn't like a clever mislead.
Right, it was a cheap mislead, not a
like the Sixth Sense. You know, there's when you find out at the end, you watch it, and everything kind of works because you realize it was your own prejudices watching it that made you think a thing was going on when in fact it was not the way you thought it was going on. Where here, no, what we saw is what we saw, and it was how it was presented to us in a misleading way, and in a way that doesn't entirely make sense all the time.
Right. Exactly. I was also surprised they didn't show her like changing or in the shower so we could see if she has like scars all over her back, because I would have loved to see if like her husband or her sister or someone would have noticed, like when we got you, when I married you.
That's actually a good point, Phil.
Yeah. Yeah.
Somebody would have noticed that.
Yeah, exactly. So and it wasn't mentioned once ever in the film. So it's like, all right, I would assume it would have been mentioned at least once, but it wasn't.
Well, like the mom should have known that, right? The mom.
The mom, the sister, husband.
The all of them, yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, I had dated someone years ago who had had back surgery. And so she had a scar down her back. And it's not a thing you necessarily think of normally. It doesn't just keep coming up in conversation, but they could have shown that, and you know, they could have let the audience think, because the husband's killed off so quickly in the film, we could have been led to think, well, those were from being abused, or anything. They could have been left there. It's not necessarily something like people go, oh my God, you have one of those evil twin scars.
right.
They certainly could have done it, but it's at the same time, I don't think it's necessarily something that is so out of the ordinary that they would have had to draw attention to it either.
They didn't have to. You're right, but I think it would have been good. But I guess if they, I don't know. I mean, once, yeah, I don't know. It's curious.
I think for me, if they had what would have been annoying is if they had like done a scene where she's at the pool. And, you know, you see her back with the swimsuit and there's no scarring on the back. That would have been that I would have had a problem with. I don't necessarily have a problem with them not showing it, maybe because they don't want to tip their hand.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. I think she would have had a bald spot in the back of her head because his head was cut off. And so when you have that type of surgery, they cut the skin right off, which means all the hair follicles go too.
Little known fact: conjoined skull twins are actually very good stimulants for hair growth.
You've done studies, eh?
Well, it's what happens. It's the electric powers that naturally come from conjoined twins.
They revive the hair follicles.
They stimulate the hair follicles. Absolutely. Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, that's every time he was talking through the radio, hairs were growing. So it's a good thing she didn't see your armpits, man. Oh my gosh.
Actually, it was creating hair follicles.
Yeah, it had to create them, right?
It's
funny because all these flaws, but if they had smoothed those out, it might not have been as good a movie.
Well, the fact of the matter is, if you don't cheat, then you can't have that magnificent reveal in the third act.
Yeah.
So ultimately, I think the cheats were worth it just to have that moment.
Right. And basically what Juan was doing, and this is an honest thing, is he was basically trying to do a Eli Roth or Quentin Tarantino. He just wanted to make a Pulp Fiction, ridiculous midnight movie, and that's what he did. Mm-hmm.
I do want to know, like...
Oh, sorry, Mike. Didn't mean to cut you off. During the action scenes, they actually didn't use any special effects for the body. They had a contortionist.
You were telling me that, and that's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, I am curious because watching it, yeah. I had heard that they used a contortionist. There wasn't CGI. I don't know if that applies to the whole film because there are definitely things in here that I'm pretty sure were CGI. at the same time, I remember we had this argument.
Could have been wirework too.
In Conjuring 2, where the tall man?
Oh yeah, the tall man. Yeah,
or whatever he was.
No, stick man, whatever they called him. Yeah,
whatever that guy was.
Called Stick Man. Yeah,
where people were complaining about the cheap CGI. It's like, no, it wasn't cheap. You may not have liked the effect, but it wasn't CGI. It was that it's definitely not CGI. It was done through stop motion or camera tricks. So maybe that's the thing here, where it's just weird camera tricks that look like shitty CGI. I have no idea, but yeah, it was just weird stuff. I do want to know who is the people, who are the people running an asylum or a hospital or whatever this, and like the hospital gets shut down, research hospital, and they just say, so what do we want to do with the video of the mutant twin?
Just leave it here.
Just leave it here. Just leave it laying out in the open for anyone to find if they so choose.
All the medical records we leave behind because these will never be important again. Our entire life's work.
That made me think of the American version of The Ring.
It's like one day they just say, all right, let's close this unbelievable building down and just leave.
And just leave everything down. I was laughing when my sister went to the place and looked for the records because she pulled up and she pulls up like to the edge of a cliff.
Yeah, and it's like,
I'm pretty sure there'd be a guardrail there or something.
There's a castle up on a lonely hill where they've got this place too. It's crazy.
Well, it was ridiculous because that, first of all, that's something you would see in like a Hammer or Universal film. You don't see it in real. And for her or anybody to not know that building exists, that would be like one of the buildings. Oh, you got to see this building. Everybody knows this building.
People would be living there. They'd be squatting.
However, what do we want to do? We need to build a research facility. So maybe something, you know, nice complex in the middle of a field somewhere. No, how about an ominous slab jutting up from the edge of a cliff?
Dracula's castle in the Carpathians.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I said. It was like Universal or Hammer film type of thing, right on the Pacific Ocean. It was like, what?
But I like that. Like even her house was kind of interesting looking.
Mm-hmm.
I just like where they had things placed.
I did enjoy, however, when they were when the sister brings the videos back to her mom's house and they're watching it together. And they start like screaming and grabbing onto each other like they're watching a horror movie. That was fantastic.
That was awesome.
Yes, it was.
That was great. And then you see whatever that mutant is. It's like, holy shit, that's funny. Well, because it's like, I don't know if I'm supposed to be scared or I'm supposed to be laughing.
Time to cut away the cancer.
Yeah, and that reveal is one of the freakiest things I've seen in a movie in a while.
It was pretty great.
That was just oh my god, what am I looking at? It is very much feel like you said up there with the kennel scene in the thing. Like, where the fuck did this come from?
It kind of reminded me of the old video that we see in the movie Clown. That it kind of freaked me out like that. And then also in Empty Man, there was a couple in Empty Man too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we've seen it a lot. So it's nothing original, but it was like, what the fuck?
I just looked up the whole crew. Marina Mazzeppa is listed as the physical performer for Gabriel, and somebody else did the voice.
There you go. Yeah. Interesting.
Ray Chase did the voice.
Ray Chase. It was a good voice. So Gabriel was freaky looking. There's no doubt about it.
You think?
Yeah.
And I love the moment in the jail cell where Gabriel just starts laying waste. That was so much fun.
And they're standing back, some of them. The one that's pushing everybody to her is like, ah!
Well, because I think that's honest. Because let's be honest, if someone like just stood up in front of you, like turned around and their hair peeled open and a new face popped out, and then started coming after you backwards after rotating their arms 360 degrees. You would just be home. What the fuck is this?
That would be a shit your pants moment.
Yeah, it was the good reaction they all had.
Yeah, they killed them all. Every fucking one of them. Even the ones that didn't beat her up.
Yes, they just killed them all. Everybody.
Well, because they wanted to make sure you knew that Gabriel was not misunderstood. Gabriel was just fucking evil.
Well, yeah. And that's the thing is this thing like that was more crazy than the Terminator, because if that was in the news the next day, it would say 70 people murdered, criminals and police officers all dead. That would be like international news. I mean, you don't, that stuff don't happen. I mean, what's that with that?
Well, we didn't get to see the day after, right? I mean, right, it ends in the hospital.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Oh my God, that was nuts. That, yeah, I was not expecting that set piece, that's for sure.
So I don't think anybody who watched it was expecting that.
Yeah.
That was also a say,
too big of a deal, so I must say.
Yeah, I also want to say I love the use of the Seattle Underground.
Yeah. I
didn't even know that existed.
I was going to take that tour on my vacation in 2020.
Yeah.
I mean,
damn COVID.
If I ever knew that was a thing, I forgot it. But I don't remember ever hearing about that before.
Yeah, I think it was in Pig too. Wasn't it in Pig, that movie too?
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
So I wonder, like, can I open my shop there? That would be like, how do you close this down? You have an underground city. You got twice the real estate. Make use of it, guys. Come on.
Yeah, that was kind of weird. Definitely was weird.
But then it allowed them to do the fight scene among the carriages, and it was good. It was nice.
Mentioned this earlier. It was a great moment because you're led to believe that I can't even remember who it was, but that one person was being kept prisoner, because of the way they cut it, you're led to believe that it's happening in the Seattle Underground. When in fact, it's in the attic.
Yeah, exactly.
I was tricked because, yeah, Juan, I think, intentionally did that because he wanted us to think that Gabriel was living in that underground.
Right.
Exactly.
And you know, so it was a trick. I mean, that trick was a little better, Mike. That one wasn't a cheat.
That one was an editing cheat rather than a plot cheat.
Well, and I'll also give them credit because they picked, like, for the actress. We were given no information about who this character is other than she's a tour guide for the London Underground.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we understand from the flashbacks. The Seattle Guard. We understand from the connection to the doctors and all the rest because we got that opening scene. And then there's just one random woman and just the idea that, oh, wait, it's her actual mom. And they cast well because you could kind of see her resemblance, or at least.
Yeah. At first in the dark, I thought it was her when I first saw her.
Yeah.
I was like, is that her? And I thought she had been
already. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was weird.
Yeah, well, and it's been a couple of weeks since I saw this movie. Am I remembering correctly that there was incest involved?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It was.
Wasn't it the father that got her pregnant?
Yeah, something like that. There was some sort of.
Basically, what happened was
the doctor was talking about it where she said that this is a byproduct of a mother who had incest with some member of the family. It could have been father, uncle, who knows. Yeah, I think you're right.
And her mother forced her to get rid of it, saying it was an abomination.
Right.
Which
it was.
And then the child was put up for adoption so they could be adopted by a guy who puts cameras in her bedroom.
What?
Oh, that poor soul. Oh,
you're right.
So we were talking about before the
camera being in there, and why was it in there after she had been sent to her room? How did that get recorded?
You're right. Yeah. Unless it's one of them, she was that mentally damaged that they had. Oh, but they couldn't have. Back in those days, they didn't have those little cameras you could hide. So
right,
that doesn't make sense. Yeah. You don't have babysitting cameras back in those days.
But I don't know. That was in the mid-90s, right? So
the actors, but they were still like pretty big cameras, at least ones you could afford. But the two sisters, the actresses that played the two sisters, were at the correct age as well in real life, because as we find out in the movie, there's like a 10-year or 12-year difference between the children, And in real life, the actresses are like that. One's 37 and one's like 24 or something. So I felt that was good because it was surprising to find out, because I can't tell anymore from a 22-year-old to a 49-year-old.
As long as you can tell a 17-year-old, you're good.
But the thing is that they were. We find out that the older sister, the one that was the twin, she was like 10 or 12 years older. And then when her adopted mother gets pregnant, she tried to get the baby out of her.
Yeah, yeah. Gabriel was controlling her, trying to get her to stab the baby.
Yeah, that's it. Stab. Yep. Yeah. So I was surprised when that came up and that they were that big of an age difference. I was like, oh, all right, well, makes sense, I guess.
Well, and in a lot of movies now, there's a popular theme at the moment of found family, particularly amongst LGBTQ that have been rejected by their biological families. So the found family theme came back strong in this movie at the end, where saying that I don't care if we're not related by blood, you're my sister, you'll always be my sister. So I thought that was, I don't know if I'm a fan of that theme necessarily, but I thought if they were going to do it, they did it very well in this movie.
But right. I mean, that's a theme that's been around forever. I mean, at almost any show, it's like, well, but we're a family. Any TV show that goes more than two seasons, we're a family. We're not just co-workers or crew of the Enterprise or whatever. We're a family.
Fast and Furious, yeah, is all about that.
A lot more about it in the last few years. That's all I'll say.
Yeah. Right. I was disappointed with the ending though, because they did like the wrong turn reboot ending where it was all a dream, and then they show you what really happens, and it's like, oh, come on! They should have just went with the.
I'm a little tired of the nihilistic endings. I want somewhere a couple people live and they're happy.
Well, then they shouldn't have shown the nihilistic ending. They should have just went where. Well,
with this, it works because it shows how she's now got power over him. It's different from the wrong turn one because it's actually something that's happening to him. It's just reversed now. So what we were seeing happen to her is now happening to him.
Right, but he, Gabriel, sees himself pull the trigger and kill the sister. And then they rewind it and it didn't happen. It's like they should have either had it happen or they shouldn't have had that even in the film in the first place.
But I'm with Barrett, is at least they have set up an explanation for why it happened. We're in wrong turn. It just happened so they could give you a fake out ending. And
yeah,
there's no premise for it here. At least
it makes some
narrative sense.
right.
But by the way, Eric, I speak with the themes of the film and you have the found family. I will say also with the Seattle Underground also is a thematic thing because it's the thing that got literally just buried underneath, you know, the Seattle Underground is representing Gabriel. Because it's all you need is a little peekaboo door to get into the
also, Eric, she found her biological mother too at the end
because it
all happens in that hospital room with the biological mother.
So
that's interesting as well. But Mike, that's a good call. Seattle Underground is a symbol for Gabriel. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I am kind of the opinion that this is like sort of like a superhero horror film. It's, you know, in that Gabriel is basically like a supervillain, right? It's got a secret identity. Wears a costume.
What's that film that we did a couple of years ago where Roy from The Office was the father?
Brightburn,
yeah, so something like that. But anyway, continue.
That's how you would describe that movie? Roy from The Office is the father?
Well, he described the other movie as the movie Taylor Swift produced.
That's right. I did.
You have a twisted worldview.
It's no more twisted, no more twisted than anybody else's.
Yeah.
Hey, at least
he's not putting a camera in his daughter's bedroom. So.
Hey, The Office and Taylor Swift make me happy. So I'm not causing harm in the world.
Mm-hmm. You're just causing confusion among people trying to understand what the hell you're talking about.
Well, that's fair. Mike knew what I was talking about. He knew what I was talking about.
Yeah.
That's because he's been talking to you for 10 years.
That makes me worry about Mike.
Yeah, no kidding.
Anyway, continue, Mike, about the superhero villainy thing and all.
No, so I just saying. So to me, this is kind of, it's like sort of a weird, you know. But as a villain lair, right, it makes perfect sense, right, that the Seattle Underground would be Gabriel's lair, just thematic.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, sort of like how I've always said, like in a weird way, Walter White was a lot like a comic book villain. He's got the alliterative name. He's got an alias and a costume, and then he finally gets his evil underground lair.
Not necessarily the way he wants to, but yeah.
No, but you
know, but back to this movie, Gabriel never lived in the underground. It was all a red herring.
Yeah.
Well, Gabriel never really lived. I think it could be argued.
Except at the beginning.
Is that really living?
Well, he had an existence. They decided to cut out the cancer.
I guess if you're a brain in a jar, are you living?
Well, no. I'm talking about when he was hanging off her. He was still alive.
Yeah, he's still not an independent entity.
Well,
I guess he is in
a lot of conjoined. Yeah, a lot of conjoined twins feel that they're separate and they don't necessarily like each other either.
Yeah, true.
Also, why they chose to kill Gabriel? Why didn't they kill the girl instead? Gabriel could have existed
because she looked more human to them. So that's how humans work.
Also, he didn't have a lower half.
Yeah,
and he also was like a psycho too. Unlike
and he was also trying to kill everybody. Yeah, there's that.
Yeah.
Which one should we save? I'm going to kill you all. I know which one. I know how to solve this.
He had good reason to want to kill them. They were going to kill him.
Meeny, miny, mo.
Actually, Barrett has a good point there. Because was Gabriel evil, or did he become evil because he knew they treated him like shit at the hospital?
I don't know how they treated him at the hospital. We got like 30 seconds.
Right, but Barrett did have a good point, which is he knew they were going to kill him.
They were trying to save the two of them. At some, I was the sense I got, and then like they're like, okay, fuck it, he's a murdering asshole. We can't keep doing this. But are they experimenting on him? What were they doing to him before that?
Right.
Because it's one thing to keep. We were perfectly willing to keep him alive and in a cage and poked and prodded and electrocuted for the rest of his life.
But then he fought back, and then it's time for him to go.
Like, oh, well, exactly. Fuck that now.
Yeah.
So we don't know. It's an unanswered question.
They might have created him.
But then he also went and wanted to murder his mother. So
that's because she let them do that.
Yeah. He blames his mother for putting him in that institution.
Oh, by the way, folks, just gonna say, if you're ever planning on murdering a bunch of people, one, reach out. I've got some names. I've got some laundry I need cleaned. But. Like, don't, like, have a list of the order in which you want to kill people. Start by kidnapping the last one on your list and holding them while you then kill the rest. Just kill the first one you get. Either move them to the, either leave them alone until you're ready for them, or put them at the top of your list, one way or the other. This whole thing is just so inefficient to kidnap a person for the purpose of killing later, when everybody else you're just killing right away.
Well, that always happens in these things, these films, and I've always pissed
killer
me off.
Has a clear list who they're gonna go in order.
Well, no, I don't even talk about the list, but when they take people and they say, all right, take them away and we'll kill them later, it's like, no, if the mob is the best, The Italian and Jewish and Irish mob know what to do. They just, and the Russians, they, and the communes, they just shoot you in the head. And that's it. They two in the head and one in the chest, and they're done. They don't do this torturing stuff or put you in a cage for a few days.
But no,
they,
I can
tell you.
I can understand kidnapping and torturing people because you want the moment to last. I get that. Yeah. I understand that for dramatic purposes, you want to bring all of your people together, gloat in front of them all, and then kill them all together. I can get that. The idea that I'm going through a list and I'm saving you to last. Oh, but you know what? I just want to make sure I get you when I can. So I'm putting you to the front of the list, but I'm going to for the encounter and then the kill at the end. That's just horribly inefficient. They were no one doing, because he's clearly fine with killing all the rest of them as he found them.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The mother did not fit the MO.
That's true.
Well, the girl got moved up too because she got in his way, like at the end when he was trying to kill the mother. He's like, I wasn't planning on killing you until later. Now I'm going to do it now.
No, but see, there you go. Flexibility, expediency. Yeah. You have to be willing to modify your carnage on the fly.
Yeah.
Well, and that's the problem with Gabriel. He didn't follow the mob rules. He should have read Wise Guys or watched Goodfellas, and he would have been all set.
Tell me exactly how he's going to read anything, Phil.
That's
through her eyes.
Does he have like a little nightlight back there?
Well, besides Eric Webster, everybody's seen Goodfellas, and probably including this girl. So he feeds off her brain. She would have known about Goodfellas.
Well, she's like a 20-something, right?
Oh, maybe, yeah. She has it. What's a good fella? Yeah, what's a good fella? Yeah, that's a fair one.
What's a Scorsese?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So that's a fair point. You're right. Goodfellas is now 20-30 years old, actually. So oh my god, it's 30 years old. That's so depressing. So she hasn't seen it yet. That's a fair point. Yeah. My wife hasn't seen it, so there you go. Eric hasn't seen it. So.
I haven't seen it in ages. Like a lot of movies.
My wife hates Ray Liotta, so I can't watch it with her, so
I've seen that film at least 20-something times, if not more.
Me too. I love that film.
Oh, yeah.
I can't say I'm a big Ray Liotta fan, but it's a good movie.
Oh, Liotta's awesome in that film. I don't care what anybody says.
He can be awesome. He's not always awesome.
He's not always awesome. I agree.
Sort of like Sam Neill.
Right.
But he's awesome in that film. He's freaking awesome. He played it perfectly. He was like always on the edge and like freaky and all that shit. The drugs bothering him and all that. Yeah, that was a great film. Good film. Fucking best. Anyway, sorry. So what else? Anything else that we need to talk about? Is there scenes we forgot or that was on your agenda to bring up? Anyone?
Well, we didn't really talk specifically about the whole showdown in the cop shop. Which,
yeah,
it was over the top, you know. It was like very unbelievable. Just like, I think that cop that chased Gabriel would have been dead from chasing Gabriel. Wouldn't have been in that scene if it was, you know, Gabriel was as badass as he is in this scene.
Yeah. I mean, the whole thing, honestly, it reminded me of, he's ripping off Lee Winall. This is from Upgrade in the meth house. Or when he went nuts and he just killed everybody. It's like, God damn it. But, hey, you know, he's buddies with Lee. He probably said, hey, I like Lee's stuff.
Yeah, if you haven't noticed, Phil is not in any way taking sides in the Lee One Hell.
Oh, I'm a huge Lee One Hell. Yeah, I concur. Yes, yes. I loved him even before we did Upgrade. He was like one of my favorite screenwriters. So, yes, yes. He is the man. After Upgrade,
somebody on YouTube talking about him, he kept on saying Lee Wannell. I was like, "What? What are you doing, Lee Wannell? What? That's not how you say his name,
Wannell." Well, I mean, I can't insult the man because I've screwed up words many times, but I'm usually good with names. I can get the names, but yeah, that's not right. Wannell, that's not.
Well, you know, right. It's. Oh my God! Well, you know, we're heading into the fall. See, we're actually officially in the fall season. Weather's getting cooler, you know, and it gets a little chilly at night. I like to put on those nice Wannell pajamas.
I'm surprised you pronounce Lee correctly because it's spelled L-E-I-G-H.
Lehigh, yeah.
Yeah, so you just said that.
Lehigh Wannell.
Yeah. That's awesome. But anyway, so that scene was, I liked the scene, but all I kept on thinking was one bullet and she's dead. And they of course the two cops that don't die are the quote unquote lead cops. And it's
of course they weren't the redshirts.
Have you never watched a movie before?
Yeah, exactly.
But I don't want to see the same thing over and over.
Then stop watching movies.
Are you
expecting Hollywood to be original?
Right, that's a fair point. Well played there. Well played. Yes.
Somebody was complaining about what was it? Somebody was complaining about them coming out with remakes of movies and just giving them the same title.
Yeah.
Well, they're not being original with the movies. Why would they be original with the title?
Yeah, exactly.
That's true. But honestly, the Terminator police scene was better because he was getting shot, but it doesn't affect him because he's a robot.
He's invulnerable. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. So that was better, but this was pretty cool. And because they kept on missing and they're incompetent, it made it even better of a grindhouse film because that's what you would see in a grindhouse film. It's so stupid and ridiculous.
It's like, right.
Well, and Gabriel was just so fast. That was part of the issue too.
So how do you get faster when you're turning around backwards? That's what I want to know.
And bullets too. I mean,
I'm not saying faster than bullets, just faster than the people. He's reacting faster than they are.
I know.
It's almost like none of it really makes sense. and yet, because nothing makes sense,
it all makes sense.
That's right. That's
no, right. None of it makes
that
sense.
That is what Buddha said.
Yes.
Okay.
Like the Buddha.
Yeah.
Life is like the conjoined twin that lives inside your head
and comes spouting out.
It only makes sense when you come to terms with the fact that none of it makes sense.
A peekaboo door.
Oh my God.
I think we're done here.
We may, especially when we're going
whannel
pajamas.
Whannel. All right, so I guess we're done here. So we can give our final thoughts on the film. But before we do that, we have some time to discuss news or what we've been watching. What about you, Eric? Anything that you wanted to bring up that would be interesting to the listeners of a Dark Discussions podcast?
Well, I'm pretty sure anybody listening to this already knows about it, but Elvira came out of the closet.
Yes, as a bisexual woman.
Mm-hmm. She's had a girlfriend for the last 19 years, so.
That is true. Yeah.
That happened. I don't have any other news other than that.
Well, and it makes sense because, you know, when she said I was amazing, she was referring basically to me using my tongue. So that's.
Oh, my
no, God. But you're doing so clearly she was faking it.
Doesn't matter.
Oh, my God. This just
went downhill.
for folks who are curious, Mike interviewed Elvira at a ScareCon convention a couple of years ago. And he's
I had 30 minutes with Elvira. She said I was amazing. That's all they need to know.
As far as what I've been watching, I watched a movie called Superhost on Shudder. I liked it. It's about a couple of people that do a YouTube channel going to different Airbnbs and reviewing them. So it gives a view of people running a YouTube channel, which I now do, and it kind of made me hate myself. But other than that, I enjoyed the movie. And then I also watched a movie that's available on Amazon Prime. It is a very, 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 very low budget movie called Llamageddon.
that movie is hilarious.
About a llama that comes down from space and wreaks havoc. It is so low budget. It's awful. Except there's a few things that make it worth watching.
That llama is awesome.
The llama looks pretty awesome. And there's one dude who has a different shirt in every single scene.
Yes, I love that.
And then if you stick it out to the end, there's a great llama-themed rap over the end credits. So those are the three reasons to watch that movie. But really, I can't recommend it in good conscience.
Okay, now wait a minute. The llama rap on these...
That you were both talking. What's up?
I was just asking if we should do it as an episode.
No.
Okay,
Mike, what was your question?
Okay, on a scale of one to Zombievers, where would you put the llama rap?
A 7.
Okay, given the awesomeness of Zombievers, film. That's pretty good.
It could be a good Grindhouse film, Phil.
I mean, you can turn it on Prime and just fast forward to the credits and listen to the rap. That might be better, actually.
Right, I'll probably skip the film. Yeah.
Oh, it's so fun.
And other than that, all I've been watching is that there's a series. It's on some cable channel I have never heard of and always forget the name of. But you can watch it on Hulu. It's called Motherland, Fort Salem, and it's about an alternate reality in which in Salem, the witches actually signed a treaty with the U.S. government wherein people would stop burning witches as long as every witch born from there on out was conscripted to the military. So we're now in modern day U.S., with a witch-run military force and some stuff that has popped up around that culture. And I love alternate reality stuff like that. So if you're into it, check it out on Hulu.
So it's an alternate reality in which, A, there were witches, B, the witches that there were being burned, and C, then the witches agreed to be draftees.
Yes.
Okay.
All of that. And there's also an interesting aspect to the way they depict magic in the series, which is that it's all voice-based. And these witches in their training, it's basically a form of singing that they learn how to do to carry certain tones that create magical effects.
And do they have a chosen one who speaks the killing word?
No.
Oh, okay. Because Dune's coming out, just saying.
Oh, okay.
Gotcha, Mike. Gotcha. All right. Anything else, Eric?
That's it.
All right. Let's go with you, Barrett. You said you saw some film called Llamageddon.
I was just there with Eric. I watched it too. I think it's hilarious. But no,
it is hilarious, but it's horrible.
Yes, it's definitely so bad it's funny. But probably the thing I've watched recently was 9 Perfect Strangers that just ended on Hulu.
Yeah, I've seen about 4 episodes so far.
It's pretty good. I wouldn't put it in the great category. I enjoyed it. Maybe worth giving a watch. It's more of a drama than anything else. It's not, you know, horror really. Yeah, I'd say drama, maybe a little bit of thriller in there. And then
it's definitely a little thrower. It's a little thrower in there.
Yeah. I learned something else. Too. You have never seen Scanners?
I have never seen Scanners, no.
You should see Scanners. That's all I got to say.
Yeah, you should.
That's my last statement.
You're right, right. Yeah. That's not a Cronenberg film, is it?
Yeah.
No. Oh, it is a Cronenberg film?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, then I'll have to see it. Yeah, I haven't seen it yet. Yeah. I don't even know if it has an appropriate Blu-ray release yet either. I don't think it does. Yeah, but either way,
It has a Blu-ray release. Yeah.
Oh, all right. I'll have to check it out. All right, sounds good. It's old enough. I could probably even find it free on Netflix or Hulu or something, or Tubi.
Likely, but yeah, I can't believe you've never seen it. You should see it.
All right, sounds good. All right, so that was it, you said?
Yep.
All right, let's go with you, Mike. What do you got? What do you got?
I really don't have a lot. I've just been rewatching when I had 30 minutes episodes of What We Do in the Shadows, and when we have an hour, I've been rewatching Better Call Saul, which both shows I highly recommend. But I really haven't. It's beginning of the school year. I've had very little time for a lot of stuff.
Have new seasons come out for those?
What We Do in the Shadows is on a new season, season three. They're like four, actually episode five, I think, drops tonight of the new season. And then Better Call Saul, I think, starts at the beginning of next year. Early, I think it's like slated for February for the final season. But I don't know. Bob Odenkirk had a heart attack. I don't have no idea how that's affecting production.
Yeah.
That may push it back, the bastard.
Having a heart attack and spoiling him. How inconsiderate.
Well, before you finish filming the final season. After great publicity. Oh my god. And I just got a notice on my phone that the foundation is starting, I guess, for Apple TV.
Apple TV Plus.
When's it starting? When's it starting?
Apparently now. Because I got the message that it's available now.
Oh, it is?
Cool.
So along with the new episode of Ted Lasso, so either it is they fucked up the messaging, or they let it drop a few hours early.
That could be.
Oh, shoot. All right. I gotta work this out, because I was talking to you, Mike, earlier, and you earlier, Barrett, maybe, and Let's, too, maybe do a podcast on that series. I don't know if anybody's still interested. I mean, when I brought it up, it was like 7 months ago.
Assuming it doesn't suck, and if I can find the time.
Yeah, same here.
Yeah, all right. I'll take a look. I'll work it out. I got to do research on it, because I'm surprised that it came out. I thought it was coming out in like November or something. So, yeah, all right. So, yeah, that sounds good. Foundation, that's going to be looking good. Hopefully, fingers crossed, right? Yeah. Either way, Apple's killing it, Eric. You remember we thought you, or I should say you thought.
Well, I don't know if they say they're killing it. I would say 10% of what they're producing is very good.
Yeah. their problem, you know what their problem is? Is, like you said, it's their design for their app is terrible.
It's pretty bad, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying Netflix and Hulu or Shudder are any good, but those are much better.
I mean, nobody has a great interface, but theirs is particularly heinous.
Yeah.
I think their other problem is, you know, that there's too many fucking services, and it's hard for me to remember sometimes what I'm subscribed to. It's like, and because you don't have like the TV guide to tell you what's on this week at what time.
Uh-huh.
It's easy to lose track of your shows. It really is. And you know, I got to give Disney Plus credit for something, which is that they've got like a show, at least that if you're interested in the Disney stuff, they have something just about every week. And they were always dropping on Fridays, but now they're dropping on Wednesdays. So there's a reason to go to them at least once a week.
Right.
They've had like a Star Wars or Marvel show every week now for the last year and a half. So if those are things that you're interested in, and obviously there's a lot of overlap in those audiences, you know, to go, okay, it's Wednesday, let me go see is the new episode of this year. That right now it's What If, before that it was Bad Batch, before that it was Loki, you know, and just on and on and on. Yeah, WandaVision and so forth, Mandalorian. So then now that they've been up for a while, they can get the content rolling in on a regular basis. They also have like children's stuff and what have you. You know, Netflix is just sort of, oh, look, we just dropped 43 episodes of a TV show we spent $1 billion on. Maybe people will watch it. Maybe it won't.
It's impossible
to
track anything down on Netflix.
Oh, my God.
Even the latest big thing they put out, I have no idea where to find it.
Right.
All right, Netflix all of these apps are terrible. I am convinced that someone, because they're all terrible, they are convinced that having easy to navigate apps is like putting all the stuff you want at the front of the grocery store. No, they want you walking up and down the aisles hunting for shit.
Well, that's a valid point. And then I think there's some truth to it. At the same time, whew, boy, do I not use the Apple TV app unless I have to.
Yeah. Right, right. Yeah.
Like, I can access everything from there. I can access, you know, HBO Max and Hulu from there, but I don't. I'll go to their separate apps. Thank you very much.
Right. Yeah, I do that too. Actually, go to their separate apps. Yeah. Oh, and the worst is when you press the wrong button on your remote on the Apple TV, it automatically goes right to that Apple app. It's like, God damn it.
Let me tell you, I just installed mine like a couple weeks ago, and it took me a while to figure out that the top part of the remote is like you rub your thumb on it. Yes, yeah. I had idea, and there was no instruction saying it was a touchpad in the beginning until you get to a certain point in the menu, then it shows you.
Yeah, you should just text me, dude. I would give you a whole demo of it or something.
I didn't want to embarrass myself.
That's a fair point.
I figured it out.
That's a fair point. That's what happens when all these damn companies refuse to give manuals now.
I know.
Right. Download and print it with your own ink, those fuckers.
Yeah, and the first thing it asks is what language, and you to get past that, you have to know that that is a button and a pad at the same time.
Right, and
the outer ring on that remote, Barrett, is also clickable. So you can click, left, right, up, down on that too. So theoretically, you can do the touchpad. But
I got to be honest, I prefer the downloading the manual to the other alternative, which is me having to take the manual to school to put it under the microscope to read the print.
Yeah, that's a fair point too.
That's true too.
Yeah, that's true.
Because they have to squeeze 78 different languages in the selling it globally. Fuckers in other parts of the world, how dare they buy products that Americans want?
And of course, they have the California warning. This makes
the legal sense. Disclaimers. Yeah, you got to have half of the book is legal disclaimers.
Warning: using Apple TV may cause cancer.
The best one is for automobiles. If you buy an automobile in California, it says because this has oil in it, you could have cancer. It's like, what the fuck?
Yeah, particularly for California, they've got a warning on everything.
Oh my God! Please,
bottled water.
Oh my God, San Andreas, please, any day now. Just
drown.
Just drop them all in the ocean, for Christ's sake.
California, yeah, the whole West Coast, get it out of here.
Well, soon with the climate change, Texas is going to be the environment of California. California is going to be a desert or dropped off into the ocean.
California was a desert.
I was going to say California actually is a desert that's very well irrigated.
Yeah, they're stealing the water from Nevada, and that's what all it is, bastards.
And every time Nevada complains, they put another jackpot machine in there.
Yeah, because some bozo 150 years ago signed a 200-year lease that California can use Lake Mead or something. It's like, dumbass. Well, let's forget about the people here in 100 years from now. I'll be dead. I don't care. I just want the money.
Right?
Fucking bastards. People. Anyway, anything else, Mike? Mike?
I think that's it.
Okay. So, for me, I watched some more Rick and Morty. So episode 4 of season 4, there's a Taylor Swift reference, so that was great. So that's a good show if you're interested in science fiction, comedy, and cartoons. Also, I watched a film with my wife, and I can't remember what the hell it was. We're supposed to watch Malignant. Oh, I remember. It was Stillwater, the Matt Damon film. That was pretty good, but that's not really for this podcast. And then I saw 4 episodes of that series that Barrett mentioned. What was it called again? Nine People.
Nine Perfect Strangers.
Yeah, that one there with Nicole Kidman, and she's still looking good at 52, I think. And then I saw 3 episodes of a TV show called Clickbait on Netflix.
Oh, is that any good? I saw the preview for it.
I thought it was all right. I wasn't really a big fan, but my wife watched the whole series, and she said it was really good. It stars Alia Kazan's great-granddaughter, which is kind of interesting, the director of On the Waterfront. And then I heard Cruel Intentions on Hulu is really good, but I haven't seen it yet. I don't know if anybody's familiar with that one.
Cruel Intentions?
Yeah.
Not the Sarah Michelle Gellar movie from the 90s?
No, it's a TV show now.
Huh.
You know, Hollywood just uses titles over and over.
yeah, you know how Sarah Michelle Gellar got her start by doing the Christy Swanson Buffy the Vampire movie into a TV series? Well, now somebody's doing to her what she did to Christy Swanson.
So, yeah, but either way, Cruel Intentions is I heard it's pretty good. I haven't seen it yet. I'm not too familiar what it's about, but just a heads up for anybody that's looking for a new TV show that is getting good buzz. And that's about it. Otherwise, I haven't seen anything else. I may actually start playing video games and right after the drive-in thing that me and Mike are going to, because that weekend is when Far Cry 6. Yes, exactly. So I may get.
I was about to ask if you were going to play Far Cry 5 again.
Yeah, I may have to, because I got bored of playing Fallout 4 for the seventh time in the past year. So I was going to switch back either to Far Cry 5 or Cyberpunk 2077. But I still have Resident Evil 6 or whatever it's called. I haven't played that one yet. But I'm probably going to skip that one for even longer now and go with Far Cry 6. So now I wish I never bought Resident Evil 6.
With Giancarlo Esposito from Better Call Saul.
Yes, right. That's right. But I could have not bought Resident Evil 6, and I could have just bought it in like a year from now and for, you know, $20 or something.
Well, you'll play it eventually.
And that's why I never buy video games when they come out, because I never have time to play them when they come out.
Yeah. Well, I had time to play, but I get frustrated with boss fights a lot, so that's the main reason why I've been avoiding.
You got to go to baby mode.
Yeah, I know, but the rest of it's not any good.
He just insulted your manhood, Phil.
But Far Cry is awesome because there really isn't any bosses. I mean, there is, but not really. And so it's really just a big box where you get to do everything. It's awesome. So I'll probably play Far Cry 6 right the day it comes out.
Well, it's the same thing. It's a sandbox game, and Fallout is a lot the same way. I mean, yeah, there's technically a story, but it's mostly go around and kill things as you wish to kill them.
Exactly. Yeah.
Unless they're bigger than you are and you have to run away.
Well, and Far Cry 6 is going to be awesome. Because this one, you kill the commies. Because it's supposed to be like a Cuba, and you go out and you
kill. I was wondering how they were going to top the last one where you got to kill cult people, because that's like right up Phil's alley. But yeah, okay. Now I think they've hit the dead end, because I don't know what's left. I guess the last Far Cry 7 will be like killing Yankees fans or something.
Well, Giants fans for that matter. But actually, the cool thing about Far Cry 6. They have a character that you have to play, so it's not like Far Cry 5 where you just make up your own character. But
it's like all the earlier ones where you
like the early ones. But it's one difference: the character you can choose, they have both a male and female version. So that's cool.
Okay, so it's kind of like Mass Effect. I think they had a male female version.
Yeah, right. So the character's name's Danny, so it can be Daniel.
Why do they have to be virgins?
I don't get that.
You said there was a male and female virgin.
Well, that's my Boston accent, probably. But I'll play with the girl, because I always play video games as the girl,
because they always look nicer from behind. Anyway.
Yeah. Actually,
that's my friend's explanation for why he always plays girls in video games.
Uh huh. Yeah. Does he have heels in his closet?
Not that I know of, but you never know with him.
The cool thing. The cool thing about Far Cry 5 was you could make all different ethnicities too. That was pretty awesome.
Oh, I want to say
black girl. I played as an Asian girl. I played as a white girl. Yeah, sorry. Continue.
I just realized I just forgot something. So we have teased a running joke on this podcast. It came up again this episode that one of my former students had uttered the immortal phrase, "What's a Hitchcock?" to just illustrate how the future of humanity is doomed. But just to open up the window of crack of hope and light. You know, I always give my students the survey at the beginning of the year to tell me something about them. And on there, of course, is what is your favorite movie? I had three students put Midsommar as their favorite movie.
Cool.
So,
which won't be their favorite movie in 10 years from now, but that's how
it doesn't matter.
Are. That's the how idea young people that, are, though.
The idea that 14, 15, 16-year-olds have watched Midsommar.
Which is R-rated.
Which is R-rated.
I wouldn't have been able to if it was me, because my parents didn't let me watch that stuff.
Yeah.
That had watched Midsommar, which is I think is a very adult movie. It certainly does not have the temperament, the pacing.
Dude.
And not only did they, but they loved the film.
I'm not even talking about the violence in that film. I'm talking about the sex scenes. My mother would have freaked if I was watching that for the sex scenes. Like, what the hell are you watching? So, yeah.
Stop watching that here. Put on Taxi Driver.
because that is a Scorsese film. That's different.
I never understand the disparity in people's objection to sex over violence.
Yeah.
Because, like, just yesterday I was watching the latest episode of 911. It's a guilty pleasure. And at the end of the episode, spoiler, if you watch 911, somebody on this primetime television show came up behind somebody else and slit their throat like you see in a horror movie. And I was like, how the fuck is this on primetime? But people freak out if you see a boob.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy.
Well, Phil is about to start a political lobby for putting boobs back on TV.
Were they?
He wants to put the boob in boob tube.
I will back that lobby.
You know, though, I don't watch TV that much.
Because there's no boobs.
I watch it on Hulu, but still, my point stands.
Yeah, that's fair. That is nuts.
Well, it makes me wonder, like, was it edited for broadcast TV?
I don't know.
As far as I know, they take the same episode that airs and just slap it on Hulu the next day.
Okay. Now, Mike, let me ask you this. The thing that's weird about What's a Hitchcock isn't that he didn't know who Alfred Hitchcock was. The thing that But the thing that's weird about that is they didn't know that Hitchcock is the last name, so they didn't ask who is Hitchcock. Or who are you referring to? They actually said, "What's a Hitchcock?" as if they didn't know Hitchcock.
Well, Phil, you don't have to take an entrance test to get into public school.
Yes.
Yeah. It's just bizarre, though. I mean, that's what I'm saying.
He wasn't a stupid kid. He was just a dumb kid.
What's a Sullivan? What's a Smith? You know, what's a Johnson?
A Whannell.
It's a Whannell.
Right. I mean, but because Hitchcock's not like that uncommon.
It does make me wonder, though, like if Hitchcock was referring to an object, what would that object be? What would a Hitchcock be?
Let's not continue this conversation.
Yeah, it makes me depressed.
If you have an idea, please send it to darkdiscussions@AOL.com.
What's
the diagram of a Hitchcock?
What is a Sullivan? I just don't know.
Oh, God.
Oh, my God. Anyway, all right. So I think we're all done here. So let's give our final thoughts on this film that we discussed tonight. But before we do, Eric, you actually do another podcast with your buddy Dan.
I do. It's a general interest podcast called the Ascansity Podcast. That's spelled ASKANCITY. You can get it wherever you found this one.
And what did Dan and his wife think of Malignant?
They have not seen it. They did not go with me.
Okay, fair enough. And Barrett, me and you and rotating guests do another podcast. We just released one episode from a British film that we did. What's this podcast?
Halloween Boutique Psychotronic Reviews. What was the last movie we did? Man, my brain is just failing me.
The one that was released was Medusa, right?
Oh, yes, Medusa. We just recently released Medusa, and we are going to do a Grindhouse-themed month in October.
That's right. So obscure 70s, 80s films. We're just going to pick a few of them and do an episode so for the Halloween month.
Medusa?
That was a recent release.
That's not part of the Grindhouse.
Medusa is a new film that came out in the UK. It was a screener that we watched and we did an episode on it with Kevin Letts.
Yep.
All right. It was pretty good. It was pretty good. You would think so, right, Barrett? You thought it was pretty good, right?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. Yeah.
Yeah, it was good. All right. And Mike, me, you, and Eric are going to do episode on a film called The Edge soon. On what podcast is that?
I think that's a lie.
I keep hearing that it's a lie, so I'm thinking it's a lie.
Much like the big earthquake in California, it's been threatened, but it's never actually happened. Yeah, so this is Cinema a la Carte, which is a podcast that we do on rare occasions when we're not doing other stuff, but we've been doing other stuff, so we haven't been doing the Cinema a la Carte. But when we do Cinema a la Carte, if we ever do it again... if we ever do it again, if we ever do it again, speaking of which, the Pooping Bandit is back in the school. if we ever do it again, then we will be covering a movie called The Edge. We cover movies that are not necessarily Dark Discussions material, but are movies that at least one of us feels passionate about discussing. And we, in theory, do it monthly or once every 3 or 7 months or something like that.
Biannually.
But I think we still have some that haven't been released yet, so
yep, they're coming, they're being edited not as we speak, but they're being edited as we
Phil
we
is a forward. Master of multitasking.
yep so they're coming out, and they'll be popping up both on the Cinema a la Carte podcast stream as well as the Dark Discussions podcast stream, so look out for that.
Don't cross the streams.
That's right. Well, Halloween Boutique does too. That pops on its own as well as Dark Discussions, and I also throw in Amy Rain's podcast on the Dark Discussions as well as her own, because
Fishnets and Phantoms.
That's right, exactly. That's a pretty good podcast, and the reason I put it in is because originally that's where it used to go before we became the network, and some of the listeners of it actually said it was pretty good. And so I said, if they liked it, we'll just leave it on the stream.
And Phil went, oh, shit, something we release is actually good? Okay, here we go.
That's right. Well, we usually get 100 listeners within 2 days every time we release an episode. So,
all right.
So it's that, yeah. And then as the months go, they slowly grow at a lesser extent because everybody's jumping on to the next episode. But yeah. All right. So let's get into our final thoughts on Malignant, and let's start with you, Eric.
This movie is a wild ride. It's got some questionable acting. It's got some questionable script writing. Love the score, love the action, love the effects. It's a wild ride. You're probably either going to love it or hate it. I loved it, even though I had a lot of complaints about the plot that didn't make sense to me. But overall, I came out as liking it.
All right, sounds good. Yeah, for me, pretty much what everything Eric said. I still have no idea, though, where I would put the film on a top 20 end of year list as we get closer to December.
You got a few months to figure it out.
Yeah, exactly. But. I would concur with pretty much everything that Eric said. So, yeah. Barrett, what do you got?
I love this film, and I agree with Eric. The score is really good in this. It's one of the strong points of the movie, I think. And I enjoyed watching it. It definitely is bonkers. Not everyone will like this movie. It's definitely not for everyone. But I give it a thumbs up. Go and watch it. Have fun with it. Try not to be too serious about it.
All right, sounds good. Mike?
Yeah, this film is the poster child of the phrase "not for everyone." Again, I think we all can agree that the weaknesses are there, and they are legitimate. But I will say this is a film that if it's for you, it is for you. I enjoyed the hell out of this film. I walked out of the theater with a big smile on my face. Was not there, you know, early on in the movie, but it certainly was there by the end. And you know what? We watched so many of these movies, and there are ones that I watched that I'm like, okay, yeah, technically they're better than this, but I'm not going to remember them. And often that's like, I forget movies that we've covered because they have generic titles and generic. Oh, look, this is a fairly well done movie of not another Possession or Ghost or Serial Killer.
this one is going to stick out because it was unique and different, and it's just it is its thing, and it is exactly, I think, what it wants to be, and I'm going to give it credit at the very least for that. I definitely recommend giving it a shot, and you have to go all the way through because the fun stuff doesn't really kick in until midway.
All right, sounds good. One question for you, Eric. Originally, you weren't sure if we should do an episode on this podcast. I mean, this movie. Why was that? I'm just curious.
Because I was not confident that anybody else would like it. That's why I was hesitant.
Fair enough. Yeah, and I think me and Barrett just that's fair. Yeah, because we had no idea. I went in blind. I actually saw some of the trailer. That's right, because I was trying to make it a part of my date when my wife said hell no. But anyway, yes.
Nothing sucks more than when we all hate a movie and just sit around shitting on it. And I don't like those episodes.
Agreed.
Yeah. Although I did, except for the gallows, I enjoyed shitting on that movie. I enjoyed shitting on that movie the same way some students are enjoying shitting on the floor in the bathroom in my school right now.
Wow, you just want me to go.
All right. So anyway, what's that? Like I said, the gallows. Remember I said that? Why didn't if they left the door open to the high school, there'd be shit in everybody's desk.
I said, Phil, you're the first one I thought of when I found out it was happening again.
Everybody poops.
And teaches desk.
Too. Everybody poops sometimes.
Mike will have a shit in his desk soon enough. Anyway, this film here is directed by James Wan. It's available on HBO Max. So even if you're unable to get to a theater, you could watch it on HBO Max. And right now, HBO Max is doing a fantastic deal for anybody who does not subscribe or had been subscribing to through Amazon Prime. You can now get it for like $6.99 a month for the next 7 months or something like that. So you should grab that deal if you can. Stars Annabelle Wallace, Maddie Hassan, among others. Nicole Brianna White, as Eric mentioned, with the comic relief. Great score, as Eric and Barrett mentioned too, by Joseph Bishara. The film is getting fairly good reviews, as we know. Actually, Joseph Bashar has worked on a lot of Juan's films, as a matter of fact. But anyway, check it out if you want. And with all that stated, Eric, why don't you lead us out?
All right. Thanks, I really can't talk tonight.
You have Gabriel in your brain.
Thanks for tuning in to listen to us talk about Malignant. Come back next time. We'll have another topic.
Wannell!